Welcome everyone to this episode of Voices of Women Physicians podcast. Today we have back our special guest, Dr. Sarah Nazer. And I'm so happy to have you here today. And we're going to talk again about private practice, but this time from a business point of view. Setting up your private practice, all the details. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited. This is great. I'm loving doing this with you.
Yes, thank you so much. It was great episode when we spoke about our first part. And for our listeners who didn't have the chance to listen to it yet, please listen. You will learn so much. And now we will talk about all business aspects.
Yeah, this is the nitty-gritty. I love this stuff.
So tell us briefly a little bit again about yourself for those people who didn't have the chance to listen to previous episodes and about your journey of opening your private practice.
Yeah, I think I can get a little more in this episode into like the details of how I went into that. I grew up in Northern California. I did my residency and my schooling in Chicago. I had offers to practice there and there were some good offers, but I just knew that I didn't want to do a larger health system. I really wanted to do private practice. I liked the independence of it. I liked the idea of being my own boss. I think partly some of us are a little bit of control freaks. So we're like, I want to have control over everything. So that really feeds it. But I came out to the Western Washington area. I had joined in with a practice that the guy's a great guy and we got along really well. But I think about a year into it, I really realized that like his goals for the practice and how he practiced weren't in alignment with what I wanted to do. And so it was still a really great learning experience. And I really appreciated that time with him. But after 2 years, we parted ways. And I think that's honestly really common. I heard a statistic somewhere and I don't know how true it is, but it was like 80 something percent of docs end up leaving their first job within the first 2 years. And I think it's just like, once you get out there, you realize your priorities change. And I was convinced that this was the right situation for me when I went into it. And then it just became really clear that it was not. So there were things that I learned how to do. And then there were things that I learned how I didn't want to do them. And I decided to go ahead and just go up the road to the next town and start my own thing. I, however, did not have any capital under me. And I had no real patients other than maybe a few that were going to come follow me to this next endeavor. So I actually put out there to a couple of people that I knew in the area. One was a surgery center administrator that I knew of and had been doing surgeries there. And then some were just office managers at other offices. And I put out there like, hey, I just need a space. I need an exam room and preferably a little office. And I just need a space. If I can rent out space in somebody's office that's already existing, then I can start practicing out of that. And that's a really cool way to start because you're really just office sharing. You get the opportunity to keep your expenses really, really low, which is super important when you're starting. I cannot tell you how much more stressful it is when you go in big on a build out or big on a practice purchase. And then you realize, oh my God, I literally have to work myself into the ground to try to keep this afloat. So I always recommend to people, if you're going to start as small as you possibly can with your overhead. You may not even want to hire an employee right away. I, for the longest time, pretended like I was a different person on the phone. And it was really weird talking about myself in the third person, but I didn't even have any money to like pay anybody. So if I remember right, I think I was Melissa at one point when I answered my phone. It was very weird.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, do what you got to do. There's now virtual receptionists and stuff that you could pay that are overseas. It is a lot more affordable if you really want to go that direction. But I just did it myself and took on an alter ego for a while. And I think it took about 6 months before I was really ready to hire somebody. But I did. I joined in with a general surgery group that had one of their physicians retire. So they had two exam rooms and a back office that I could rent out. And we just figured out like a per day type of a rent. So that was a really nice thing rather than a flat fee for a while, because I only had enough patients to fill half a day and then a day and then 2 days. So I paid based on the days I was there, which was really, really helpful. And then I hired a part-time employee. It was a gal that was right out of high school. So she was just excited to get into the medical field. And she was my front desk and I taught her how to do everything that I needed. And she worked part-time and we grew her hours as I grew, and I'd give her other tasks to do so that we'd try to give her a little more hours. And then it just grew from there. And it was really fun at first because we had a big whiteboard in my office and we would visually draw this bar graph of like how many new patients we saw more every month. And it was really cool to get to watch that grow as we went. It was kind of an encouraging thing for me because there's times in an entrepreneur's life where you're just like, this is terrible. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yes. I'm going to put experience.
Yeah. It's like sometimes on a daily basis, but that's nice if you can give yourself visuals to encourage yourself. So I did that. I learned a bunch about marketing. I had a friend of mine build my first website. website, which was fine at the time. I didn't know anything about marketing or SEO. But the other thing I started doing is as it was growing, I started making sure that I was reading. And that's something that I think it's overlooked, or maybe you just get worn out after reading so much in higher education. But I don't actually really read, truthfully. I do the audiobooks. So like I have an Audible subscription, right? So I drive like at least 40 minutes each way to work. So that is my education time. And I will listen to books on business, books on time management, books on finances, you name it. I've got a list and I'm going through like 4 and 5 books a month. But that is how I started educating myself on things and trying different things out. And then that grew, that got bigger and bigger. It got to a point where we were really busy and I was working 4 full days a week. And the other general surgery group was really busy. And then we had taken in a plastic surgeon who had left the larger healthcare system and he needed a place to go. So we were like, yeah, we'll just shove you in one of the offices. We'll make it work. So we had this hodgepodge of doctors that were all like building their practices. And it was a really, really great setup. We all got along great, but it just hit a point where it was like, I'm too busy and I need to expand. I need to get my own space. So it was a very bittersweet conversation, but we all knew it was time for me to fly the nest. So I actually found a space locally, worked with my banker, and we came up with the plans. I had a good contractor that was local that I used. I try to use all local people, just kind of support local economy. And we put out the proposal, landlord liked it, and we started construction. And that was a whole different ball of wax. Yeah, that's a different phase. But I've been in that office now since the end of 2020. We built it with the spa in mind. So that was planned at the time. And then this last year, I hired my first associate doctor. So we're moving right on through. And you start to find the stuff that you really enjoy with practice. And that changes over the years too. So I've been working all through the years, changing the services I offer, really honing in on the type of patients that I'm really excited about seeing. And now I realize I'm really excited about the business side of things. So I'm slowly starting to step away from patient care and I'm starting to look at hiring more like my replacements.
So tell us a little bit about steps, how entire process went for you, like getting LLC, like all of this.
You definitely are going to need to formulate your LLC, or in some states, like in Washington, it's a PLLC, it's a professional limited liability corporation. Some states have a PLLC, some have an LLC. That designation helps with your liability. Right. So in theory, if somebody comes after the business, they can't come after you personally, your personal assets, your house, whatever. That does not mean, however, that your filing necessarily is an LLC. You can file more as like an S corp, which is typically how most of us do it. And that's stuff for your CPA to handle. But don't think that you have to originally be an S corp. You can legally be an LLC. And that's probably the better way to go. You'll have to register your LLC and get your business license. So your LLC has to get registered with the Department of Revenue because state wants to know where they're getting their taxes from and they're going to get them. So definitely make sure you do it. You're going to want to make sure you have your business license, which is separate from your medical license. That's usually something through your Secretary of State or Department of Licensing. That's all online. Most of these things are pretty inexpensive too, by the way. Like this isn't real expensive to do. Then you have to have a physical address where you're going to be practicing, because now we start getting into the things where if your business license and all of that stuff, you could put your home address on it and it's fine. You are the business. So you can put that address down however you want. But when you start getting into like making sure your DEA is updated and your malpractice and your liability insurance, like they're going to want a physical address. So your next step is typically finding the place you're going to practice and lining up all of these applications so that basically as soon as you find your space and you sign act, you can turn all of these in, because those take time. And your insurance contracts also. It's not that hard to do your own credentialing. That is something that you do have to have your physical address for. You've got to have your malpractice and everything already done. But once you have those things, then you start the steps of like, do I want to be credentialed with insurance? Do I not? Some people can do cash practices. I'm all for it. We have a kind of hybrid at this point. Like a lot of the stuff I do is cash, but I still take most insurance. But you can totally do your own insurance applications. Most states have it as like a general application that you're filling out that you're just sending to every insurance. The hard part is that you probably want to put it on like an Excel spreadsheet so that you can start following up with them, and you kind of have to harass them a little bit because they will just like not process it if nobody bothers them sometimes. So that can be something that I think physicians or your office staff, like I really think credentialing is fairly easy to do. It's kind of time consuming. You just have to be a little organized, and then you've got to do the follow-up calls. There are places that will do credentialing for you, but I will tell you, I have never been quoted less than $5,000 to do credentialing.
It's very expensive, yes.
And considering that like, I literally am just turning in an application application and harassing somebody, like, I would like to save $5,000 for that. Like, I can do that, especially when you're just starting out. You've got time. It's fine. So I don't know that that's somewhere that I would necessarily like pay to have somebody else do it. But yeah, those are the big things. You have to make sure that you have some of the basic stuff. There's like your business formation, then you're doing all of your doctor parts. So your malpractice, your office liability, and your DEA, and then you're doing your insurance credentialing. Those are kind of the three stages. And unfortunately, like, you cannot just skip a stage. You do have to have one completed before you can do the other. So yeah, I mean, it can take 6 to 8 months to get yourself ready to actually see patients. So when I started going into private practice, I actually started filling out those applications and doing that licensing in January of my third year of residency.
Oh, so you started in advance. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was in Chicago doing all of the stuff for the state of Washington. It was a lot, but you can do it all online. So it was fine. And that made it so that when I got there in like July, I think I had about 30 days or so, maybe 45 days, where there were a few insurances that were still lagging to get in, but most of them were done. So I could hit the ground running, which is really what you're aiming for.
And when you changed from being this person's practice to your own practice, did you need to redo entire thing again with credentialing?
Mm-hmm. That is one of the hard things. So no, I did not. But that was because when I went into that other person's office, we had the agreement that we were actually going to be two separate practices. We were just going to office share, and we were going to be expense sharing and staff sharing. And in theory, the idea looks really, really good on paper. I think it's very difficult to execute that well, which was where we fell apart. But so I already had technically my own, it was like Sarah Neitzel DPM PLLC, that was my organization name, and that's how I was credentialed with each of the insurances.
Oh, I see. It's wise. It's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Now, if somebody is coming from a larger private practice group, odds are you have just been looped in under their own contract. So yes, you will need to do all of your own. And that's part of the deal. It's a long process. So if you go ahead and you know that's going to be a thing, you start 6 to 8 months before you're ready to leave. Like, there's nothing to say that you can't be credentialed with an insurance, because the organization you're with isn't billing necessarily under your organization. They're billing under their own. So they have a separate group ID that they're billing under with your NPI. You're just going to formulate a new group with a new NPI. So it's usually doable at the same time.
So still okay, yes. I see. Perfect. And let's talk about marketing. What helps? How did you get those patients?
Yeah, marketing is like, I don't think I will ever learn everything that I need to know about marketing. It's a whole field in itself, and for good reason. It's pretty complicated. I think I started with some basics, and the basic stuff that I would tell everybody to be doing is make sure that you have a website, learn a little bit, unless you can find somebody that can do it for you. I would probably find somebody to do it for you, but if you can get some SEO work done, and that's what ranks you on Google and on these search engines. So the better you're dialed in with your SEO, the higher you're going to show up on Google or Bing or whatever search engine they're using. So that's an important one. You could learn to do Google Ads, which I would highly recommend, especially when you're first starting. It's really not hard. As soon as you open your Google Business account on Google, they're going to set you up with a whole dashboard, and it's right there. Here's how you run a Google ad. And there's a lot of analytics and stuff it'll give you. And most of the time I was like having to look up on a separate browser, what does this mean? Because I just didn't know. And so you learn a lot of it the hard way. But I think that's a really important one to do so that you can start to get your name out there. And then making sure that you are going out into your community to your referral sources. And here's the other thing. Don't just do that piece of paper mailer that has the person's picture and has their full bio description. Honestly, I don't know how many of you have actually gotten those from other offices. I never read them. You know what I mean? Like, I look at it and I'm like, oh, cool. Dr. So-and-so is now with vascular. Great. We got another vascular surgeon. Awesome. Okay, cool. And he takes all the insurances. Great. And I'm done. Right? Like, that's literally the amount of attention most private practice docs have to give to mail. So I recommend doing something that is more of kind of a rack card, if you've seen those. So it's like kind of a half poster card of introduce the docs super quick. And then like, what are the services? Get to the point really quickly about what services that doctor is specializing in, how they can get a hold of them. If you want to have yourself go out, have this stuff available, give the new doctors your cell phone number. Here's how you can get a hold of me. Please don't give it to patients, but like, here's how you can get a hold of me. And then when you're seeing new patients, whether they were referred or not, make sure you're sending your note to someone. So if you got a referral, great, send it to the referring provider. If they just showed up because they found you online, send it to whoever they put down as their primary care physician, because that's how they're going to be like, oh, we've got a new person and they send me their notes? Heck yeah. So that's how you get more referral sources without having to physically go in. But I think that coffee and snacks and you showing up or pastries go over really well with people. And it's not a full lunch commitment. But I think making friends with whoever the referral coordinator is for an office or office manager or the front desk staff, as well as the doctor, is a really good way to do it. And then just making sure that you keep those lines of communication open, because that's how you build that reputation. So those are really kind of the big ones. Like, you do want an online presence, you do want Google Ads, but you definitely need to start getting your name out within your community. And then you start getting into all of the psychology of marketing, and that's a whole podcast in itself.
In your community, like when you show up with pastries and coffee, do you call and make an appointment or something? Or you just come like, hi, I'm Dr. Such and Such, nice to meet you.
I've done it both ways. I think if you really want to actually sit and have a conversation, I think it's worth calling, making an appointment, because none of us really have that much time. And what 5 minutes we do get to eat lunch, we typically would like to take a breath. But there were definitely times when I showed up with just a box of Panera coffee and some of their donuts or whatever, and just dropped it off for everybody with a bunch of our information. It was like, have at it. Let me know if you need anything, and not disrupt their day a lot. But then the doctor's noticing, because suddenly there's coffee in the back room and they're like, whoa, whoa, where'd that come from? So you don't have to make an appointment. But if you do want to actually sit down and talk with somebody about how their services and your services might actually be complementary to each other, then I definitely would just make a 15-minute appointment and bring them coffee. That's it. Don't make a big thing of it.
Are doctors usually receptive? Like, as they usually agreeable? Days are so busy nowadays.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're more agreeable if you bring something food-wise. We're all very easily bribed with food. Yeah, like, I don't even like when reps come into my office anymore, but boy, if they're willing to bring lunch, I think about it. I really do. So I think there's ways to make it better, right? But generally, if one doctor's asking to talk to another, I mean, I think that's doable. You could also do it during pandemic time. I had a lot of clients that I told them to do Zoom dates, like make a Zoom date, have some food service delivered to their office for them, or coffee delivered, go DoorDash for them, but then you do a Zoom date.
Zoom date, yes.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, super quick.
And it's easy, yes.
Yeah, and it's super easy, and you can just line them up back to back if you wanted to. So I think it's a really effective way to do it, to be honest. It's very efficient.
Actually, yes. By the way, for LLC, did you do it yourself? Like through LegalZoom or something? Or you didn't hire like a lawyer or something for it?
No, to get the LLC, you're literally just filling out an application online and you're paying them money. That's it. Now, if you're looking to have your articles of incorporation and all of the paperwork that you need to go along with it, there are a lot of different places that can do it for you. You can't use LegalZoom, which I did. For the first one, I was like, yep, I will pay whatever. I don't know, it was like $50 or something to get all of my stuff, right? And it looked all fancy. And honestly, the only time you need it is to open your business bank account. Nobody else cares. It's your LLC. So I had to have that paperwork for my bank account for the business, but that's the only time I've ever shown that stuff. So the first time I did it with LegalZoom. I just paid a little bit of money. I don't know that it was necessarily everything I was supposed to have, but it was close enough and it was good enough for the bank. The spa and two other businesses that I have, I was at a place where I was busy enough that it really didn't make sense for me to be the one to go through LegalZoom and do all of that again. And like, you got to start weighing out your hourly rate that you would be making if you were doing doctor things versus the ancillary stuff like this. And I didn't really have an assistant that I felt, one, had time for this. The only person I had that I thought could do it didn't have time. And then everybody else, I was like, I'm worried that's going to get a little confusing. I'm going to end up answering more questions than it's worth. So I actually called around. My attorney was able to do it, but attorneys do charge a lot of money for that, like over $1,000 for that. It's insane. Surprisingly, I was then complaining about that to my bookkeeper, how I wanted to get this done. And she goes, you know that as a CPA firm, we can do that. And I'm like, what now? And their fee was like half. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll pay half of that to have somebody do it. I don't want to pay over $1,000 for it. That seems like a lot when I can do it on LegalZoom. So there's options, like talk to your CPA office, talk to attorneys. Sometimes there's just firms available that's literally all they do. But I think if you have the time and you're not super busy, yeah, do it for cheaper. But once you get busy, like, it doesn't make sense to use your time that way.
Yes. And any lessons learned and mistakes to avoid in this process?
I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way, I'll be honest. I would say probably the ones that go along with people's biggest fear are like legal stuff. So I would say one of the biggest lessons I learned was with employees. Hanging on to a not good employee for too long costs you a lot of money. In some way or another, either the productivity of the practice suffers, things miss timely filing, like there are problems with keeping a problem employee for too long. So I would highly, highly recommend if you feel like you have a problem employee, start considering ways to remedy that. The harder lesson is when it comes into the legal side of that. And depending on the state you're in, Washington is a fire at will state. It's a hire and fire at will state. So at will employment, but there's still a lot of interesting nuances around that. So honestly, I would recommend if you're not sure about what you legally need to do or shouldn't do in regards to firing an employee, find an employment attorney. Please find one. Pay the money to do a consultation with them. It's going to cost you a few $100, but it will cost you a lot less than if you go ahead and fire the person and then you find out that they're going to try to come after you for something stupid. And it always catches you off guard. I mean, it can be somebody that you have made all of these accommodations for, that you've really invested time and money and relationship in, and then you let them go and they turn around and try to come after you for wrongful termination. So it happens. And when it first happened to me, I was terrified. Like, I lost so much sleep. I was just beside myself. And I also felt very like betrayed at the same time, because I really had put a lot of investment into the employee. And when I got a hold of an employment attorney, she was awesome. And we got everything worked out. We hadn't done anything wrong, so I was fine. But there were a lot of lessons learned from this attorney, where it was like, we went through how everything happened and what I did. And there were things that she was like, yeah, I would do it this way next time. This leaves you less open to liability. I was like, I never would have thought that that would have even been a problem. So if there's any issues with employees, I always highly recommend talk to an employment attorney. I used her at a different time when I had another problem employee. I called her and gave her the rundown. I think I was just a little nervous right after the last time I had to talk to her. And I gave her the rundown about this employee. And she was like, why is she still there? And I'm like, well, because yeah, I need to fire her, but I want to make sure I'm not going to get in trouble. She's like, no, this is dumb. Just let them go. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm well within my rights now. Okay, got. So having that available to you is super important. And I think that really just goes along with other lessons learned, are to actually build up that team around you and don't try to do everything yourself. When you hold on too tightly to trying to do everything yourself, you end up actually doing a huge disservice to yourself and your business. You won't be as successful. It won't be as profitable. You won't be able to pay your employees as much. Like, you need to use your time on stuff that involves your medical license. If you are doing anything that does not involve your medical license, you are doing somebody else's job, is basically what it comes down to.
How do you find this good attorney?
Honestly, I did a little bit of research just online, employment attorneys in my area, obviously looked at reviews, and then I used the referral of my current attorney, who I was using for just reviewing contracts and stuff like that. I was like, hey, hypothetically, I have this problem. Who do I talk to? And he gave me this person's name. So using referrals is huge. So you could also ask your CPA. They're going to know the attorneys in the area, because surprisingly, CPAs and attorneys have a lot of conversations. Like, I didn't know that until I started really working with them. So I think there's people within your community. And that's one of the nice things about sticking with local people, is you're supporting your own local businesses in your community, but they will support you back. I can't tell you how many times I've had a really good referral to another professional, or even patient referrals. I get patient referrals from like my attorney, my CPA, like I get them from all over the place. So I think that's another thing. Like, when you're building your team, try to really cultivate those relationships and don't try to do other people's jobs.
By the way, how long did it take from the moment when you started and until you got fully booked?
I mean, are we talking really booked? Or are we talking profitable?
Let's say profitable.
Because there is a big difference, right? And it's an important difference, because I think we assume success and profitability has to do with how busy you are. Because that's the mentality that we're in medicine, is it's like, you just have to see as many people as you possibly can. And that's not true at all, nor is it how I think anybody should be doing it, right? But till I was profitable, till I was able to pay myself something because the expenses were paid, 4 months.
4 months, yeah, that's good.
I think it was like 3 to 4 months. When I got the spa going, that was profitable in about 2 to 3 months and had completely paid itself off in 9. So you get better at it each time you do it. But really, if you think about it, the lower you keep your expenses, then the quicker you are to being profitable. And then you can grow your systems from there, right? Then you can start working on your efficiencies, because the cheap stuff is never efficient. Let's be real. But then you get to a place where you're like, no, I should spend the money on this, because that's going to make me more productive. So I think about it that way.
By the way, like office equipment and EMR and all of those supplies, what do you use and what are the easiest ways to get it?
Well, the easiest way to get everything is buy it new, to be honest. Is that the most cost effective? No.
To get it on a budget when you just start.
Yeah, quickest way is new. Less expensive is going to be like refurbished or used. And I think just a quick search online to try to figure out if there's a place around that does that kind of thing. Sometimes you can go on to different forums, and like we have a podiatry forum. People put up ads all the time for chairs they're trying to sell or x-ray equipment they're trying to sell. So you can always buy somebody else's stuff. You can also look for docs that are retiring in the area. Like do your networking, right? Like talk to the other doctors, be like, hey, is anybody retiring anytime soon? And see if you can go in and buy all of their stuff, because they might just be looking to offload it and go, here, take it. I have a local podiatrist that I'm friends with that I didn't meet her till I got here, but she stopped doing surgery years ago, but she still had all her surgical equipment. So suddenly one day she was like, hey, do you want surgery equipment? I'm like, yeah, absolutely I do. So, I mean, I think I paid her a couple $100 for stuff that was just sitting in her closet, but it literally made like all of my surgical packs complete.
It's perfect.
Yeah, you just got to get a little creative with it. EMRs are expensive. There's no way to really make that cheap.
Which one did you use?
I used Practice Fusion, which is very app-based and it's very user-friendly, and it was cheap at the time. They're not as cheap anymore. It's gone up like everything else, but unfortunately, it's also not really advanced its efficiencies very much. So bringing in a second associate, I had to pay for a whole second EMR system. Like I couldn't just add him on, right? And that meant I had to have a whole different billing system, because the billing isn't technically done through Practice Fusion. You have to have a clearinghouse. So that's a separate account you've got to have set up. And so when you start using some of the cheaper EMRs, that's why they're cheap, because you're kind of piecemealing it, right? So you have to get a different program that talks to that, that then talks to the insurance clearinghouse. Like it's just the whole thing. And I've done it like that for years. Like, don't get me wrong, I've totally done it for years. And then you have to have a separate payment processor because they don't have a payment system through Practice Fusion. But when you get as busy as I did, where now you're seeing 30 people a day and you're running payments and you're working with that EMR, and then stuff has to get entered into the billing software, you realize like I'm actually paying staff more money to go around and do all of these things, these little tasks to make this system work, than I would be paying if I just had a system that did it all. So we're in the process of really switching to Advanced MD, which is also pretty app-based. It looks pretty user-friendly. And I think that it's all included. Like they do all the billing, they do all the stuff. We do use a separate billing company, but they're very familiar with Advanced MD money, but it's also going to be a lot more efficient for our office.
Yes, it makes sense. Absolutely. And what else helped you specifically from business perspective? What tips would you give to other people?
I think honestly, the biggest tips I would give people is like, understand that we did not get educated in business, but that doesn't mean that you can't educate yourself in business, right? Like we learned really hard things. We learned how to be physicians. We learned how to be surgeons. You can totally learn how to do business. It's nothing that is going to be as hard as med school. Promise. Some of the concepts are a little abstract, but we have a really high capacity for learning as doctors. So I think the big thing is accepting that I don't know a lot about some of these other things like accounting and marketing. And like, I'm never going to have that level of knowledge as somebody who is an expert in that field. And assigning that work out to professionals and paying them to actually do it has made me more successful in business. And then the second part of that is just commit to continually educating yourself. I read all the time that like the world's top 1% of income earners, Warren Buffett and all of these people, they spend a lot of their time reading. They are constantly educating themselves. So it's a constant process. You didn't stop learning when you left residency. I mean, I know we all needed a break for a minute, but like you didn't stop learning. So there isn't any reason that people can't learn to do this, but I think making sure that you're continually educating yourself, whether that's through audiobooks, buying books, however you take that information in, the best. And then understanding that there may be some concepts that you come across that you're like, yeah, I'm never going to be good at this, and giving it over to people that are experts in that field. That is going to make you hugely successful in business.
Delegate something is important. Absolutely.
Yes, please delegate. Please stop trying to do all of them things. I probably delegate more than I should at this point. Like I'm constantly delegating stuff off to my team, all these tasks.
And what are the creative solutions to massively increase profits and ability to serve the community?
Yeah. So that's what I started doing here with a lot of these clients that I'm coaching. So I'm now coaching doctors on how to do a scaled up level of business for their private practices. And I've always been a really creative person. And so I do really well with really creative problem solving. And it's always been that way. Doctoring side of things, coming up with really creative ways to help offload somebody's foot so that they can still be walking and not putting pressure on the spot I don't need them to. Things like that were kind of inherent for me. So when it comes to helping other doctors, which I'm really, really passionate about doing, because we all deserve to be able to have our time back. And I think private practice is an amazing vehicle to be able to do that. If I can help somebody take their existing systems and come up with just a more creative way to do it, it shaves off the time it takes them to do it. It increases their profitability. Like, it's usually really just fine-tuning what they're doing and fine-tuning their staffing. The staffing is a huge, huge part of how your business is profitable. And so working with doctors on just creative ways to do that. So I had one practice that they're really, really restricted on space, and they needed a person to be able to be there who was there for training all the time. They needed to physically be there in person, and it was going to take them weeks to get this done. And they're like, we just have no room. Like, we can't do that. And I brought up, well, what about like telework kind of a situation? Do you need somebody physically in the office? They were like, well, yeah, we thought about that, but we can't have somebody who has no training trying to do this from home. Like, they physically need to be there. And my next thought was, okay, who else is on your team that is very experienced and is independently working that could do this from home? And they were like, wait, so you mean just like split desk time? I'm like, why not? Who says that person has to be there the whole time? Maybe have your experienced person there 50% of the time. You train the other person in their desk 50% of the time. Who says you can't do that? And so things that are out of the box, out of our normal thinking.
Optimizing it, yes.
Yeah, like, let's optimize your systems. Let's do the things that we can do and get creative with this to try to figure out how to increase your income, increase your staff training, get your office really, really efficient. Those are the things I get really excited about, honestly. And I love looking at that for other people. Like, it is really, truly a lot easier to look at that for other people than yourself. It's true. But it is really, it's an interesting thing. And everybody's got such a different set of goals for their practice in their business, and they've got a different setup originally. And so it's always kind of a changing puzzle and a moving target. And it's nice to be able to have, I have a coach that I use that I go to them periodically and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. And they always throw me something out of left field. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's where coaching, as you know, can come in really helpful, because we get in our own head about like, I have to do it this way. And this is the only way we've ever done it. And then somebody pops in and goes, or not, maybe you do it this way. And it's like an epiphany light bulb goes off for people. And it just makes such a big difference with a coach. And I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. And I am absolutely loving coaching other docs. It has been amazing.
Yes, coaching is so helpful. It's actually what I do, opening possibilities. It's awesome. And tell us a little bit more about what you do and how to connect.
Yeah. So right now I have a company that's become kind of the coaching and business consulting company that's called Visionary Practice Solutions.
I like the name.
Well, I mean, you got to be a visionary about it, right? It's meant to get you the big picture stuff. And then we start working on how to fine tune everything in the office, how to really level you up. And the clients that I've worked with have just had amazing new levels met just within the year or two we've been working with them. There's a lot of support offered. I've got a lot of these systems. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel. So I'm more than happy to share that stuff. And I'm sure we'll put it on the podcast too, but people can reach me at visionarypracticesolutions.com or at drsarahvps@gmail.com. And those are easy ways to get a hold of me.
Do you do it online, or does person need to travel and to be in person?
We do it on Zoom because I've got people all over the country. We're like all the way from like Boston area to Florida to Illinois to Colorado. So it's a little bit everywhere. So yeah, Zoom is honestly the easiest way to go. And we just figure out what the needs are for people. And then, okay, how do we best reach this? Do we need to meet weekly? Do we need to meet twice a month? How is this going to work the best? And right now it's individual coaching. I'd like to get to a place where we have, I think, enough people that we can do like a group call that everybody's going to really get a lot out of. And right now we've been kind of going through with people, and then we graduate them, and we go through and we graduate them. So I think it'd be nice to kind of create more of a community like you've got, where people can kind of shoot ideas around. And that's kind of the ultimate goal.
It is awesome. Thank you so much for coming to this episode and for sharing.